Welcome to the Above Politics Show.
Like it or not, we live in times of danger and uncertainty.
Dedicated to intelligent discussion and debate of serious political issues in the U.S. and around the globe.
Absolutely unrealistic.
Borrowing money from China to finance the war in Iraq.
President Bush continues to not let facts get in the way of his ideology.
From AbovePolitics.com, this is the Above Politics Show.
Hello and welcome to another fun-filled edition of the Above Politics Show. I am the persuasive and perspicacious Justin Case.
And I'm the tea-swilling and warm beer-drinking Martin Bain.
What kind of stupid wiener name is that?
Ouch, man. Who are you and where did you come from?
I kid.
I just, that warm beer thing, it just got under my skin there for a second. But
if you've not had quality warm beer, you haven't lived your life. Who cares about all this, you know, frosted, frozen beer stuff? Nothing better than a pint of warm English beer sitting outside the pub over the village green watching two villagers play cricket.
I suppose that in light of the warm beer remark, that it's a good thing that we'll be talking about the U.S. economic meltdown this week.
Yes, because we might be selling you warm beer because it might be cheaper. No, in all seriousness, absolutely, that is something we do need to talk about. And we'll also be talking about what it means to fight for change. We've got some insightful posts from some members, and I tell you, I've been looking through some of those, Justin. And again, we've got some very sharp people on the AboveTopSecret.com website. And we've also got an interview with Roger Natman, who is a member of the European Parliament from the UK Independence Party, otherwise known as UKIP.
All right, that works. Well, you know, that does work, but unfortunately for us, sometimes things don't work.
No. We did chuck out there, didn't we, about, you know, we wanted to give you, the listeners, the opportunity to earn even more ATS points. And, you know, we've been pretty generous. We were doubling what we were prepared to give you. No one bit. That's very worrying, very depressing. Justin and I had a tear rolling down a cheek when we discovered that no one had come and spoken to us about a trivia challenge, which is very sad, Justin.
We're just going to have to go back to doing things the way we used to do, which means it's my turn to throw out the trivia question for the week. Here it is. What sort of cookie weighs 4,000 pounds?
C is for cookie, that's good enough for me. Oh, cookie, 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 starts with C. Yeah!
What sort of... I'll have to have a think about that one, I'm sure, and I'll Google it later. But yes, but I do have one question. If the US economy is not doing well, how can you all afford cookies?
Well, right about now, we're starting to have to shop on the discounted and day-old rack. It's totally amazing. Every time I turn on the TV or pick up a newspaper over here, something is going wrong. And, you know, I'm glad to see that some of our ATS members are on the ball here. They've started some good threads on the subject. As a matter of fact, ATS member Rock Puck started a thread which I believe the title is Banking Regulators Close IndyMac.
And I suppose it would be a good idea for you to explain for those non-Americans who IndyMac are.
IndyMac is a large multi-branch bank. It's primarily located in the state of California. And comparatively speaking, it's not unlike the Northern Rock Bank. And hey, I know you still have an axe to grind about that.
Need more still money from my wallet is going to hold up a private banking institution. It's probably not a good thing to get me too wound up on that one, but I was actually in my local town looking at my own mortgage, and the mortgage advisor was saying that Northern Rock are offering some very good deals. And then she looked at me and said, and how are they doing that? And I said, probably with our taxpayers' money. She went, yep, because Northern Rock needs to get money in, so therefore they are offering some excellent deals, maybe a above the norm interest rate, deposit money with them. But that's all been funded by me, the taxpayer.
Oh, boy, and I'm sure we're going to get a dose of that here in the States. ATS member Jeff Wayne ignited a thread that's titled U.S. Considers Takeover of Mortgage Giants, and they are, of course, referring to the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac mortgage operation.
Are those names for real?
Those names are in fact for real. I kid you not.
Read somewhere that between these two companies, I believe they call them Freddie and Fannie, I believe is how they're sometimes referred to, is that ultimately their sort of liabilities amount, is it to $5 trillion?
6.3 trillion, but who's counting?
And that's just a fantastic sum of money. So is it fair, looking in, for me to now say that these two organizations are now directly backed and underwritten by the U.S. government and then the U.S. people?
That's not the case yet, but it's likely to be the case in the future. These two companies could be... Just hang on a sec. I'm going to say the word. Nationalized.
Oh, see this. It's not a word to be embarrassed about. I mean, we've done the nationalization thing in the UK, and then we've nationalized and we sold them, and then like Northern Rock, maybe it'll come. You know, it'll be nationalized, and then we'll sell it again, and hopefully the government will make money. It's something that happens out there. But you know, that's interesting, because presumably the moment these two banks are nationalized, then the U.S. how should we say balance book sort of has then $6.3 trillion worth of liabilities plopped on it.
And that's just what they're willing to admit to. The banking laws are still not transparent enough. The banking industry still doesn't have to be honest with you about what it has, which means they can continue to lie their butts off about the nature of the subprime lending crisis. That tells me that in the not too distant future, we're going to see the story of IndyMac replayed a dozen times or so in the next 30 days.
But I guess it's not just the Americans who are the only ones having fun with money and politics.
Oh, certainly not. Hey, we've got a new episode of The View from Canada, courtesy of our good friend, Gautu789, a.k.a. Joey. So let's realign the satellite dish here and download and give this thing a listen.
Hello, everyone. I'm Spencer Tracy. Along with Doc Hancock, I host the new BTS Mix Show. We have a lot of fun, and when we're done with our shows, we like to head over and listen to our sister shows, the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous, and the Above Politics Show with Martin Bain and Justin Case on the Above Network LLC. The ATS Mix Show with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous is the source for the latest information on breaking stories, conspiracy theories, and some stuff that's just plain weird. Johnny and Dave have insightful discussions about member posts, member interviews, and exclusive interviews with experts in their field. When I need the latest news and insight from the political arena, I log on to the Above Politics Show with Martin Bain and Justin Case. Martin and Justin really break it down for me. They discuss member posts, interview members about their stance on the issues, and they have access to today's noted political figures and authors. So come on over and deny boredom with me, Spencer Tracy, and my co-host, the marvelous Doc Hancock, on the BTS Mix Show. Deny ignorance with the ATS Mix Show with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous, and deny apathy with the Above Politics Show with Martin Bain and Justin Case. Be part of the revolution. The Above Network LLC.
Hello again, everybody. This is Joey reporting from the right coast of Canada on all things political for the Above Politics Show on AboveTopSecret.com. On this week's segment of The View from Canada, I'm going to try to get to a couple of things. It's summertime here in Canada, and the political season is a little slow, so I'm going to give you an update on the Green Shift plan that I mentioned in my first segment from the Liberal Party of Canada. Now that Canadians have had a little bit of time to look it over and understand it a little better, the approval rating for it has dropped somewhat, not significantly, but enough to, I think, worry Mr. Dion about maybe trying to run an election on this platform alone. Mr. Dion has also issued a challenge to Mr. Harper to debate on both parties' carbon emissions reduction strategy. Mr. Harper hasn't accepted yet, as his party hasn't released their platform as far as carbon emissions go yet. It'll be interesting to see whether he does or doesn't, as I think it would be a great opportunity for both leaders to stand in front of the country and tell the citizens what they're going to do about the problem about carbon emissions. The next thing I want to touch on is a scandal that's been plaguing our Conservative government since about mid-April, that Elections Canada has accused them of elections fraud for their spending practices during the 2006 general election. Election Canada has accused the Tories of overspending their budget of $18.3 million by sending money into the local ridings and then using that money to run national ad campaigns. The Tories claim that this practice is something that's done by all the major parties in Canada, but the election officials have reviewed all spending practices by the five major parties in Canada for the 2004 and 2006 general election and said they have found no irregularities in any other of the parties. Conservatives have claimed that the Elections Canada is targeting their party at the moment, although the Chief Electoral Officer of Canada, Mr. Mark Maynard, appeared before a Commons Ethics Committee today and said that there is no such thing going on and that everything was done above board. This dispute between Elections Canada and the Conservatives is something that I'm going to be covering in future episodes of The View from Canada. So that's it for this week, folks. Thanks for listening, and everybody have a good night.
Yeah, so it's not hard to understand why people want change with all this confusion and worry going on.
You know, it's easy to talk the talk, but it's a lot harder to walk the walk.
Yes, I absolutely agree, and you're absolutely right. It's easy for me and you to sit here and for our listeners to say, what do those two know about anything? But we're very lucky. Again, we have some very sharp people on ATS, and I noticed that we have a nice thread from Nevermore about be the change you wish to see, which I suppose is him sort of about, you know, how do we drive things? How do we change things? And, you know, it's something I've said on the show, you know, if you don't like something, put your head above the parapet and stand for office, which I think is an interesting thing there about we can whinge and moan and say it's not right. Why has this happened? If we just sit back and let this continue, I have to say, we only have ourselves to blame for it.
That's true. And, you know, Nevermore is, he's a man of his word. He has stepped up and he's going to provide the Above Politics show with a brand new weekly segment.
Absolutely. So he's a classic example of, right, I'm going to put my head above the parapet and I'm going to do something, which, hey, fair play. And hopefully it's an example for everybody out there. We want segments from around the world. So wherever you are in the world, send us a UTU. If you think you can give us a couple of minutes, maybe a couple of times a month. I don't think we're asking for a lot more than that, are we, Justin?
No, not really. As a matter of fact, what you're going to hear from Nevermore today, these are his favorite news items from the UK scene, as well as his own opinions. And, you know, that's the same format that we're getting from Joey out of Canada. All we want you to do is to make a quickie little two-minute recording. If there's something going on in your country that you think our listeners would like to know about, then share it with us, and by all means, whatever it happens to be, put your opinion in there with it. Tell us what you think about that event, because sometimes we're going to hear stuff that doesn't mean anything to us, but if you say it's good or bad and you tell us why, it'll give us the context we need and we'll all be able to learn something.
Absolutely. And just sort of talking about people wanting to change things, we have a post from, oh, I love some of our members' names. I believe it's UFO Psych Chick Zebra.
UFO Psychic Zebra, yes indeed.
And he has a thread sort of ATS members to run for political office. And he sort of basically just expounds the view that maybe some people in ATS should run for office. And yeah, why not? Your view is as valid as anybody else's. Go ahead and do it. If you think you can make a difference, stand up there. Do it. Be counted. Hey, here's something. Here's a deal. Well, give the first ATS member to be elected to office. Hey, we'll give them a nice interview, won't we, Justin?
Hey, let's do more than give them a nice interview. We'll give them 10,000 applause points.
Done. There you are. I'm sure management are going, ah, there you are. If you prove to us that you are an ATS member before you get elected, let's just put a few ground rules in here, Justin, because we've got some very sharp members. You have to be an ATS member before you get elected. Prove that to us. Not only you get the interview, which I'm sure is, you know, there, but the icing on top, well arranged for 10,000 points to come to you. So, hey. But no, a good thread just to sort of say, hang on a minute, people can get up and do this. And there's people jokingly sort of saying, no, golly, that's the last thing we want. But, you know, and I think some of those are tongue-in-cheek. But stand up, be counted, do it.
I think some of those people are totally serious because as I scroll down through Psychic Zebra's thread here, I see quite a few posts by people who say, ha, not me, buddy.
Yeah, well, and it takes all sorts, you know. That's the thing about, you know, our website, abovetopsecret.com. It takes all sorts, and you're going to get, you know, it's, you know, you only have to think that the people who are moderators on the site, and, you know, who maybe make sure that you and I don't step too far out of line, they've decided they want to get involved. And there are some people on there who maybe have been asked, do they want to get more involved in the site, who've said, no, thank you. I like being just the person that posts. So it's going to take all sorts.
As long as we have that understanding, let's segue into our big interview of the show. We are going to talk to Roger Knapman of the UK Independence Party, and he's in what the British call opposition. So, Martin, can you tell us a little bit more about what that means?
Opposition, it means that he's not in the party of the ruling government, which is currently the Labour Party. And Roger Knapman is someone I've known of for many years. He was a member of the Conservative Party for many years, I think up until 1992. And then he sort of decided that he wasn't happy with where the Conservative Party were going on Europe, and decided to leave the Conservative Party, and then became a member of UKIP. So Roger probably typifies what we're talking about today, that someone who personally felt that things would have to change and was prepared to, you know, put everything on the line almost. Yeah, you know, he moved from being a member of the Conservative Party to eventually being a member of the UK Independence Party. So here's someone that absolutely passionately believes that change should happen, and hopefully have a listen to this interview. We do have to say the sound quality isn't perfect all the way through, so we do apologize for that one, but sometimes the vagaries of modern communication don't always work out.
Now, before we do that, let's have a listen to this new show segment. This will be the UK Political Roundup, so that you can get a feel for what's happening in the UK these days. And then let's segue right on into the Roger Knapman interview.
Hi, everybody. This is Dave Rabbit.
And I'm his co-host, Johnny Anonymous. And we do a show called The ATS Mix on AboveTopSecret.com. You know, after Dave and I get through doing one of our shows, we like going and listening to one of our sister shows on the Above Network LLC.
And you know, Johnny, one of my favorites is over on BelowTopSecret.com. It's the new and hilarious BTS Mix Show with Spencer Tracy and Doc Hancock, his partner. When you're looking for lighter entertainment, these guys will rock your world with the best of sports, news, television, radio, and general discussion.
Oh, good.
They feature member posts, member on-air conversations, and celebrity interviews. This is a show that everyone is really going to enjoy.
And if by chance politics might be more your cup of tea, then AbovePolitics.com is going to be right up your alley. You know, the Above Politics show features Martin Bain and Justin Case, and they give you insightful and informative information that you're just not going to find anywhere else. They feature intelligent conversation on posts from our members, member interviews about their stance and platforms, as well as interviews with noted political figures and authors. You know, Dave, this really is your one-stop political shop.
And you're right about that, Johninator. So come join us all. Deny ignorance with Johnny and I on the ATS Mix Show.
Deny boredom with the BTS Mix Show with Spencer Tracy and Doc Hancock.
And deny apathy with the Above Politics Show with our friends Martin Bain and Justin Case.
And then you too can be a part of the revolution. Above Network LLC.
Hi, Justin and Martin. This is Nevermore with the UK's Domestic Politics Roundup. We'll start with the Labour Party's plans to tackle knife crime, a subject that has been a big headline grabber in the UK. Less than 2 weeks since the government announced plans for new initiatives and legislation to combat the increase in stabbings, and less than 2 days since Home Secretary Jackie Smith discussed plans to force knife offenders to visit their victims in hospital, Gordon Brown's government is being put over the coals by the Conservative and Liberal Democratic parties, who describe that particular initiative with various terms such as gimmick, half-baked and jumbled up. Both parties have pointed out that the last person stabbing victims want to see whilst recovering in hospital is the person who inflicted their wound. The Labour spin doctors are now trying to make out that Jackie Smith said nothing of the sort. TV, newspapers and electronic media all beg to differ. Moving on, and in a display sure to warm the hearts of the Labour Party faithful, former Conservative Prime Minister John Major, who of course is the man who took over the reins of power for the Conservatives following Margaret Thatcher's political demise, has said that he can fully empathise with Gordon Brown's difficult position of being Prime Minister after the Blair years. His advice to Brown is to get on with the job, but when you consider that Major's government presided over a recession, splits within the party over European politics, and massive allegations of fraud and sleaze, his advice may just have been a little tongue-in-cheek. Finally, a plan to log every phone call and email in the UK is being described as a step too far by the government's Information Commissioner, Richard Thomas. The plans, drawn up in a forthcoming communications data bill, are being mooted as a defence against terrorism. But the government's record on data handling in recent months has left opposition parties cold, with the Conservatives describing the plan as appalling and the Liberal Democrats calling it Orwellian, which it most certainly is. But that's all from me for now, so back to you guys in the studio.
Okay, we have everything in place. We're ready to run this Roger Knapman interview. Got any more thoughts on the subject, Martin?
Yeah, it's just interesting, certainly about, you know, the UKIP party is clearly about independent, the UK being independent of government and control from Europe. And it's interesting that I've seemed to have had a lot more success, Justin, in getting people who are opposed to the Lisbon Treaty who want to talk to us to those who are in favour of the Lisbon Treaty.
Well, you know, being in the opposition is not a uniquely American thing. We don't have the monopoly on being in opposition to large-scale, heavy-handed government policies and projects.
This is Agent X. You may know me as a secret informant for Dave and Johnny's ATS Mix Show. What a lot of you may not know is that I chose their show because AboveTopSecret.com is the only website out there that covers all the subjects that I love, whether it's a conspiracy about 9/11 or the secret United Nations meetings with extraterrestrials. I know I'm going to get the need-to-know updated information that I crave. I'd tell you more, but then I'd have to kill you. X out.
We're on the phone with Roger Knapman, who is a member of the European Parliament and represents the UK Independence Party, known as UKIP. Good evening, Roger.
Good evening.
Thank you very much for your time. We do certainly appreciate that. And I know being a member of the European Parliament is probably a fairly busy and takes a lot of time in your schedule. Presumably you're travelling a lot between the UK and Strasbourg.
The travel is the taxing part of being an MEP. As a member of UKIP, I'm not there to make the place work. In fact, there's no situation we can't make worse. But the most troublesome thing is certainly the travelling, which is some often from here a 10, 11-hour trip. To Strasbourg.
Maybe one of the things is because we have a worldwide audience is maybe just a quick history of UKIP and then maybe just branching into what UKIP stands for.
Well, essentially it thinks that Britain should govern itself. We thought we were going into a common market and have ended up with political union, which is a very different thing. So we want to get back just being a free trade area or a common market and Britain can govern itself as it's done for the previous 1,000 years. That's what it's all about. Because none of the three traditional parties were saying that, it was necessary for UKIP to be formed. It was formed just after the passage of what's called the Maastricht Treaty in 1992, and has been gathering strength ever since, because we are saying what the majority of people want to hear.
And presumably, so I suppose one of the real sort of interesting things that's happened recently is that the UK Parliament has ratified the Lisbon Treaty. I suppose from that one, clearly UKIP would be vehemently opposed to the Lisbon Treaty.
Well, yes, we don't want further integration. We want friendship and free trade, but not further political integration. What is particularly galling this time is that all three parties, that is, Lib.com, all promised there should be a referendum before the Treaty of Lisbon was entered into, and all three parties have predictably, yet again, broken their promise. So it was in their election manifesto at the time of the last general election, we shall have a referendum, and now they're saying for various reasons, no, we shan't have one.
And presumably, if UKIP were to come to form a government at the next general election, one of your manifesto obligations would be to give the British people the ability to have that referendum?
Well, certainly, but don't hold your breath. Neither I at the last election, nor I think Nigel at the next, will be measuring the curtains at number 10. But we shall be fighting the seat at the next election and may well make the difference to the outcome of the general election itself. So that is our main aim, is to ensure there's no rest for the wicked, that is the Liberal, Labour and Conservative parties, until they actually keep their word about a referendum.
One of the interesting things is, certainly from my perspective, being in the UK, is that I see UKIP have had more success at the European elections than, say, at national elections. And I'm just interested to just throw that point out there and see how you'd respond to it, that clearly you have MEPs, but you don't have any MPs. Is that a conscious decision on behalf of the party because your focus is to have less of an integration with Europe, or is it just that historically that's the way things happen?
I think there are number of reasons for that. Probably the principal one is that because we're always banging on about Europe, we're seen as relevant to the European election. And of course, those European elections are held on a PR, proportional representation, base, which means it's easier for a smaller party to get get members elected. On a first-past-the-post general election, people say, oh, this is about a number of different issues, health, education, and so on, and you're not going to form the government, so we're actually wasting our vote. So you've got to take a very determined type of person to vote UKIP at a general election. And although we didn't win seats, we actually got 250,000 more votes than the previous general election, and shall hope to do so again until you've gradually got the critical mass, which makes all the difference.
Clearly, at the next general election, presumably UKIP would then be looking to, you know, take that. You know, I think it's probably a fairly big milestone that any political party has in the UK to actually have a member of Parliament in Westminster.
Well, we already have one, in that Dr. Spink at Castle Point joined us because he realised that the three traditional parties had been lying through their teeth about offering a referendum on the Lisbon Treaty. And for that reason, he decided to join us. So now we have two lordships of their lordships. We have one member of the House of Commons, and we have our contingent in the European Parliament of MEPs. So we've got the complete spread now.
And I was certainly aware of that when I suppose I was looking forward to actually get a seat from scratch, because, I mean, you know, clearly some people would say that you've had someone who's defected from a party, which he's still an MP, I accept that. But, you know, actually doing the full thing of actually putting a candidate and actually defeating, you know, either a Liberal Democrat or a Conservative or a Labour Party candidate.
Yeah, well, we take one thing at a time. We're starting to beat some of the main party's candidates in various elections, and that's good, whether it's local, whether it's a by-election, or whatever. And that's the first step. And down in the southwest of England here, last general election, we got 8% on average of the vote, which in a four-way split is pretty good. To put it in another way, there are 16 seats in Devon and Cornwall. We saved our deposit in three of them. In the 2001 election it was, but the reverse happened. We saved our deposit in 13 of the 16 seats in the last general election. So that's just gaining strength, imperceptibly, but because share of vote is the most important thing, and that's being increased time after time.
So hopefully next time round you'd potentially be thinking, certainly in the southwest region, that you might have more MEPs.
Well, we should certainly work to that effect, but that is, again, proportional representation. There we've done very well, and we hope to do better. It is more difficult in the general election, but we share a vote is all important.
Okay. And I'm just sort of curious, because I think a substantial proportion of our audience are probably a non-UK and non-European. What do you fundamentally see is wrong with the way that Europe is going today for the UK, that you are so vehement that, you know, you've formed the political party on a, just to campaign, it seems, on a single issue, and the fact that you're prepared to take your time to, you know, stand as a member of the European Parliament, then also to take all the travelling. So what do you think is wrong with where the UK is going with Europe today?
Well, how much is your freedom worth? How much is your ability to govern your own country worth? How much is it worth to be able to decide who are citizens of your country and who are not? Do you want your own defence forces, your own foreign policy, etc., etc.? Everything is bound up in all this. The hub of the wheel is, of course, independence. And from that independence, you decide whether or not you can have your own foreign policy and 100 other things.
And I know some people have said, and Justin would be interested to get your view on this one, there are people who say that where Europe is going is maybe a United States of Europe as opposed to a United States of America. And I'm just wondering, you know, how you, Justin, see the EU, and then maybe, Roger, you could sort of see how you feel about the fact that, you know, are we moving to a more American style of being a United States of Europe?
Well, my question to Roger in that regard is, how much more integration are we likely to see in Europe, and to what extent do you think that that's bad for Britain? Because I'd be willing to bet that whatever Roger says is bad for Britain is probably going to be what the American response is to a future United States of Europe.
And yes, I think there is an ambition to have a United States of Europe, inverted commas. The question is whether we want to be part of it. I don't wish a United States of Europe to founder, to be unsuccessful, to be lacking in prosperity. It's just I am British, and I'm proud to be British, and I want to remain British. And we're not interested in political union with our neighbours. We're interested in friendship and free trade, but not in political union.
One of the interesting things that's happened more recently is that of all the 27 countries that have to ratify the Lisbon Treaty, the only country that's been given its people the ability to vote has resoundingly said no. So would it be fair to say that you sort of absolutely applaud the Irish people's decision?
Well, absolutely. But I think I must correct you. In every occasion when the people have been given a vote, like in France and Holland with the on the previous occasion, they voted no. They don't want any more integration. So every time there is a democracy is allowed its head, they vote against it. It's really bureaucracy against democracy. And now the EU doesn't know how to respond to it. It can't believe how unpopular and pretty disgusting it's becoming. People hate it. They just see a bossy bureaucracy churning out millions of directives, destroying prosperity, and trying to take over, in Britain's case, its defence and foreign policy, and proposing a president. Well, I can assure you, as a royalist, I am not in favour of a president one single bit, and that's merely the start.
I'm just sort of interested in, I suspect not everyone will sort of realise just how far potentially EU integration is going, and I think you're absolutely right. I think a lot of people would be vehemently opposed to someone else making decisions about where British forces were being deployed. If you take, for example, 1982, you know, something happens a similar vein to the Falklands. Is what you're saying with political union that a Falklands incident could happen maybe in 5 years' time when we have closer union, and France, Germany and Belgium will influence whether the British military can actually go back and take back a dependent island?
Oh, absolutely. That's in a nutshell exactly what the objection is. Either one has independence or one does not have independence. Either one has the ability to control one's own affairs or one does not. And this business of shared sovereignty, pooled sovereignty, is just a nonsense. Either we do accept that we're good Europeans, there's going to be a new country called Euroland or whatever they decide on the name of the nation with a super national state, with its own ode to joy, another gust to the horrors, and its own flag of barbed wire, All this is possible, but it's not what we want. And every time there's an elect or a referendum in any country, other countries show they don't want it. Because you can be darn sure that the majority in Ireland that have been really bribed with the British and German taxpayers' money for years, if they say no, just imagine what would happen if we got a referendum here in Britain. And why don't you think we're getting a referendum in Britain?
That's a very good question, and I'd like to hear the answer to that.
Because I suspect Gordon Brown and the other European-leaning people in the political machine in Westminster are scared to death that the British people won't vote how they think we should vote.
Well, exactly so. But is that a good reason? Is the next question, without me starting to ask the question. The fact is, people are getting more and more fed up because they know that what they want is not happening, and they're not being given the chance to express their view. Unless you're over the age of 51, I think it is, then people in Britain have never had the chance to express their view by way of a referendum. And that's pretty bad. I look at all the countries that have no referendum provision in their constitution, like Germany, and I say, well, what is the strength of democracy and the history of democracy in those countries? And if there's no referendum, there'll be no legitimacy for the Lisbon Treaty. No referendum, no legitimacy.
Presumably your view would be today, Roger, that the Lisbon Treaty is dead.
Well, it is the 50th anniversary, not just of the European Union, but also the Hammer House of Horror films, if I got that correctly. You know, the one where they drive a stake through somebody's heart in the coffin, and still it sort of arises. So I think that both the European Union and these horror films have a lot in common. You drive a stake through the through a referendum, through the heart of these various treaties and constitutions and would-be constitutions, and they still come back and saying, oh, well, you must reconsider, have another vote.
You mean the classic case of the people will allow the people to carry on voting until they give us the right answer?
Very much so, exactly so. And if I may say so, there's one more aspect of this that you do very much need to understand, in my opinion, if that doesn't sound conceited. It is that the American foreign policy here is gravely mistaken. They think that Britain is a sort of balancing weight, which will make Europe more able to accommodate American views. The fact is that in Germany and France and the rest of the countries, they're viciously now anti-American. This was greatly shown by, of course, the war in the Middle East. And it's not going to work. The thought that Britain is some sort of balancing weight in a United States of Europe, which really wants to be friendly with the United States of America, is not working, because Germany and France are very, very jealous of the United States. They don't like their sort of Anglo-American free trade policies. They don't like the fact that America is the number one in terms of world power. And they're trying to build up a rival to it. And although that's a generalization, the fact is that by and large, a huge number of the MEPs that I meet are very anti-American. And therefore, American foreign policy needs to be reassessed.
Okay, well, I'll bite. I'm the resident American here, so I feel like I need to step in.
Possibly I might get some reaction.
Well, on the one hand, I've got to tell you that the logic that you're using to oppose a United States of Europe is, for the most part, being used here in the United States to oppose the potential of a North American Union, but we have got such hugely powerful business interests here that whatever it is the people happen to want, we're going to get the same treatment you guys are. If there ever is a referendum on the subject, they're going to make us go to the polls until we give them the answer they want.
Well, perhaps my analysis is not so far out on that basis. What I'm saying to Canadians and others is, what price your freedom, what price your independence? So I'm all for a free trade association, a NAFTA, an EFTA, or whatever else, but I'm not for political union. And this sort of thought that somehow you can make things balance out, politically speaking, is altogether wrong. And the thought that somehow America's advancing America's interests by creating a super state in Europe is vastly suspect.
Okay. It's an interesting conspiracy theory to say that Americans are a driving force behind the creation of a future United States of Europe. But, you know, from where I sit on the outside, it looks like we're having relatively little to do with the process. And mostly you guys are you're pretty busy with this one on your own.
Oh, I perfectly accept that. I'm not putting any blame on the United States in this matter. What I'm saying is it should now be actively concerned that what is being created is not in American interest.
That's clearly a fairly interesting remark, because one of the other things that I think people do...
Can I just come back to where do I really get this thinking from? Our campaign last time, and a great friend of mine is Dick Morris, the American political advisor who, whatever one might think of the achievement, got Mr. Clinton into the White House twice. And he wrote a very good article recently saying how the English Channel is wider than the Atlantic Ocean, and that British interests are therefore very much with the English-speaking world, the Commonwealth, and the United States and others. And that I thoroughly agree with. Not that one wants to be an enemy to anybody, but to be in a supranational state divided into little regional parliaments in Europe is just not the way forward. Britain is a worldwide trading power and should remain that.
Now, with that opinion in mind, since we're getting ready to wrap up here, you know who the presidential candidates are in the United States, John McCain and Barack Obama. Which would you rather see take office?
Well, I have no great views. My inclination, of course, would be Republican, and I suspect that that would be where I would prefer to see the power lie. I think they've got more in common with my own more conservative background, and I don't know enough about Mr. Obama's policies as opposed to his personality to be able to have much confidence in that. So on balance, Mr. McCain, as to whether or not he's likely to win, it's maybe a different matter.
Final question for me is, presumably if UKIP were to achieve its aim of having a referendum on, now would you just say there is a referendum on the Lisbon Treaty, or do you believe that there should be a greater referendum on what our relationship, I get the impression that there should be a referendum on our relationship with Europe. If you were to succeed in offering the British people the ability to say what our relationship with Europe is, and the British people decided that they wanted to go back to the more original concepts of the common market, does that mean in many respects that it would be doing you out of the opportunity for you to be an MEP? And is that almost a goal for you, is that if we don't have people going to a European Parliament, you will have seen that as a success?
Well, that's a lot of questions wrapped up in it. First, I think with regard to the referendum itself, it'll depend on the timing. It looks as though the chariot, the European chariot, is getting stuck pretty deep in the mud, and therefore the whole question of the Lisbon Treaty may not have been satisfied and solved by the time of the next European election, in which case, splendid, and we have a referendum on the Lisbon Treaty, suggesting that we renegotiate it as a common market or free trade area. And that would suit me pretty well. In fact, the only question you need to ask is, do you want a referendum, knowing that 80 to 90% of the people want it, and only the bureaucrats are denying us the chance? So we're pushing at an open door, I hope, in that way. And thank you for your questioning, which is very much up to the moment, if I may say so.
Well, thank you very much, and we certainly appreciate your time. And we always ask, maybe sometime in the future, maybe yourself or maybe someone else from UKIP, would it be possible for us to maybe arrange another interview?
If there's really any shortage of politicians wishing to comment on various aspects of current affairs.
Okay, well, we appreciate
words, yeah.
Thank you very much. I sort of gathered that one. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Pleasure. Goodbye.
Thank you.
I can appreciate Roger's concerns because, as I said before the interview, there are a lot of Americans out there who are unhappy about what the federal government is currently trying to do to us. And I couldn't help but notice, even through the bad phone connection, that if it weren't for just a few subtle word differences, I could have been listening to Wayne Root or anybody else that we've talked to who is not happy with the current Bush administration.
And when you sit back and you look at it like that, That's actually quite an interesting point. That, and I suppose one of the themes I suppose we have to sort of think about here is that, you know, you look at Wayne Root, you look at what Roger was saying. It's about, you know, almost is it, it's about small government. It's about government doing what government is supposed to do. But then, you know, why should somebody else, maybe outside your country, you know, the Alaskan situation, even outside of your state, dictate so much of how you live your lives? And you're right, that is an interesting view, and it would be interesting to see what, you know, members from across ATS, particularly in Europe, think about that one. You know, how many of them are pro the EU and how many of them are against the EU? And guess what? If you want to say, come and find the show thread and post on the show thread. Or if you like, you can start a new thread. I know there are plenty of threads on the EU. If you agree or disagree with what you've come on the show and tell us.
I want to deviate from topic here for a moment, because there are some things going on in the UK today which just totally baffle. And in light of everything we've just been talking about here, free will and the importance of change, etc., I've just got to ask you about some of these things, so I hope you won't be offended.
I certainly won't be, but I will be annoyed with Mr. Rabbit for leaving his sidebar book open.
Okay, I'm not trying to steal Dave's thunder, but I notice here that Max T.O. started a thread in which he laments that the UK is about to start microchipping prisoners. So what the heck is up with that?
Well, I suppose I would look at this and say, I suspect that Max 2, spelt T-O, maybe had a slightly sensationalist title on this one. It's from the naturalnews.com website, and it says the British government is to develop a plan. So I think, you know, we all know how fast these things can happen, but fundamentally, I don't actually have a problem with this. You know, if you're a criminal and you've been, you know, subject to the due process and course of law, and you've been found guilty of something, sorry, why not chip you? If you're maybe being put on a non-custodial sentence, the judges and the magistrates and the people that create sentences are trying to be imaginative and are trying to say, okay, not every offence maybe warrants time in prison. And I can agree with that. You know, if you're maybe young and you've done something stupid and you realize you've done something stupid, and you're happy to, you know, make restitution to your victims, why put you in prison? You could do things like, and they have tried it in the UK. I don't know whether they do this in the US or not, Justin, but things like curfews. We do have some prisoners who wear tags, which are supposed to monitor their position. Yeah, I think they work okay. You can work. So that means you can be out of your house from, say, 8 o'clock till 6 o'clock at 8 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock at night, Monday to Friday. That's it. Any other time, we're going to be electronically monitoring you. We will know where you are. I don't have a problem with that one. Now, if you read through the thread, a lot of people see this as the thin end of a bigger wedge. That does this mean that we're all going to have tags and basically no tag, no food, no welfare, no rights? And I can understand that one. But in principle, tagging, microchipping a prisoner, not a problem. Issues that people are going to be concerned about here, Justin, is does the tag come out when you finished your sentence?
Interesting doesn't even begin to describe it. Look, I'm a former civil servant. I know that when my federal government starts a board or a project or an independent panel, that it's only a matter of time until they do that stupid thing that the board or commission or panel decides to recommend.
Well, I suppose one of the things that we are going to have in the UK is there's a strong chance we're going to have a change of government at the next general election, just as the Americans. There's probably a strong chance that you're going to have a change of government. And I suppose that depends whether the overarching government strategy changes, or, you know, does one party have the same thought processes on crime and punishment? I suspect if it's kicked off in one party, ideas on crime and punishment typically transcend political parties. Most of them will say, yes, we need to catch criminals. We need to, if they're dangerous criminals, they need to be locked away for as long as possible. Maybe if they're not that dangerous, we need to find a way to manage and control them. But I think a lot of people, and, you know, ATS is a conspiracy website, are probably seeing this as a way for this to be done via the back door. And let's start with prisoners. Does that mean that maybe we'll all become prisoners at some stage, and the government will basically be, you know, making offences so that all of us can be tagged?
If you're right, And these policies do transcend political parties, then honestly, I fear for your safety, because I'm looking at right now at a thread started by ATS member Slackerwire, and the title is Babies Who Dislike Spicy Food May Be Designated Racist. And if they can do that to babies, then it's only a matter of time before some other blue ribbon commission decides that perhaps the gap needs to be closed and the adults should be classified similarly. And of course, they're going to want to do that with a microchip.
Yeah, and I had a look at this thread, and the source that Slackerwire puts up is from the telegraph.co.uk, which is the website of the Telegraph newspaper in the UK, typically seen or regarded as a broadsheet newspaper, and typically seen above sensationalism. Yeah, and it's a body called the National Children's Bureau, which strangely receives money from the government. Yeah, I have to look at this and say, yeah, this is a real good use of taxpayers' money. I got to say, you know, with all the trouble going on in the world, you know, I'd rather we spent, and they receive around about £12 million a year, mainly from government-funded organisations. I've got to say, I'm sure there are better places we could spend that £12 million. So we're going to grow up with a whole generation of people who are racist. So, you know, if you don't eat French fries, does that mean that you're obviously racist against the French? You know, where does it stop here? It's just crazy. And I, you know, I've had a look at the article, but there doesn't seem to be any science attached to this. Now, you know, to my mind, people I don't think are born racist. People I think become racist because of, you know, a lot of it does have, I think, something to do with the environment you're brought up with and the way that you are exposed attitudes when you're growing up. So it's not about your food. It's crazy. It's just bureaucracy. It's do-gooders. It's sort of the...
Does it make you want to stick your head up over the parapet?
These are the kind of things that you think, this isn't what I pay my taxes for. This isn't why we've sent, you know, soldiers to die around the world so that somebody can pop up and say, if your child doesn't like spicy food, it's a racist, let's condemn it now. That's not what we pay money for. What worries me is that it's funded by government organizations. That's even worse. But hey, if we were to have a show just on all the abuses of government funding and, how should we say, their interesting purchasing policies, we'd probably fill several shows with that.
Hey, that's true. But now, speaking of what we can fill the show with, I've got a surprise for everybody. Because to cap off everything here that we've been talking about earlier today, I had a chance to speak to a woman named Gabrielle Ledoux. She is running for Congress, that's the House of Representatives, on the Republican ticket. And just like you, Martin, she's willing to put her head above the parapet because she does not like, in this case, U.S. federal spending and the way that it's gotten out of control. So let's take a moment and listen to my conversation with her. Why don't you start out by telling us what first got you interested in politics?
I am a state legislator right now, finishing up my fourth year in the state legislature. Prior to that, I was the borough mayor of the Kodiak Island borough for 3.5 years. I started out as a lawyer, and as a lawyer, you help individual clients. And so it just seemed sort of a natural progression to get into politics, where you're representing an entire community, or like I'm trying to do now, represent an entire state.
Now, what would you say is the difference between being a politician in Kodiak and being a politician at the state level?
Well, I mean, certainly you're talking about different issues on the state level. If you're asking me what the difference is between campaigning in Kodiak and campaigning on the state level, in Kodiak, a much smaller community, everybody knows who I am. So it's real easy to get out your message and connect with people and so forth. On the state level, that's much more difficult.
If you make it to Congress, what are your top three goals?
My top goal is to make a change so that we have more a positive change, so that we change the way that we are doing business in Washington in order to bring about more limited government and more accountability in government. That's what I want to do. I'm not a good old boy. never have been a good old boy, never will be a good old boy. But we need to change the way we are doing business in Washington so that people will, again, have at least a modicum of trust in their elected officials. And the only way we're going to do that is by getting back to core principles of limited government and personal responsibility and accountability.
That is a mighty tall order. Can you recall what it was like when you very first realized that you were going to actually be an elected official? I mean, what was that like?
When I first realized that I was going to be an elected official, or when I first realized that I wanted to be an elected official?
Well, let's go even further back. When did you realize that that's what you wanted to do?
You know, I would say that I started thinking about it, not necessarily doing anything about it, but thinking about it a little bit after my husband and my 8-year-old son were killed in an automobile accident right here in Anchorage back in 1992. And when something like that happens to you, you kind of realize how fragile and fleeting life is. I mean, we all know that intellectually, but I mean, it kind of hits you emotionally. And when you're hit with something like that emotionally, you figure that your time here on Earth is a pretty limited period of time, and it could be gone at any minute. And at least with me, it brought out this urge to do something, maybe just to make life a little bit better.
You've just touched on something that's very important to me. As a commentator, I hear people say, I wish somebody would do something, I wish somebody would do something. But now I'm really happy to be talking to you here today because you are doing something.
Well, you know, I get tired of people who, you know, say, who complain all the time. They don't like what the government is doing, you know, on this issue. Or that issue. And I figure, you know, if you're not willing to step up to the plate, you shouldn't be complaining.
Can you remember what it was like the very first time somebody told you, Gabrielle, the election results are in and you won? I mean, what was that like?
Kind of euphoria. I think somebody called me up, and I hadn't even realized at the time I was running for borough mayor. And they didn't realize that I was actually able to go down to the borough clerk's office, and they had as the precincts came in, they wrote them up on the board. So I didn't realize that, but one of my supporters realized it and was down there and called me up and said, good evening, Madam Mayor. And he told me what the results were, and I was absolutely ecstatic.
You know, I can hear that in your voice. I'm not in the same room with you, but it's coming through the phone loud and clear. So now to wrap up here, if you could give any piece of inspirational advice to the people in our audience who are thinking about running for office, what would you say?
Never give up. If you think that if you're interested in running for office, even if it doesn't happen the first time around, even if it doesn't happen the second time around, never give up. If you have something to offer, then continue offering it.
Being part of the revolution is easy. Star, flag, and dig the mother. Whether you find a great topic or really enjoy one of our podcasts, you can make it even better by taking the time to show your appreciation and applause by giving the material a star, then flag, and finally a dig. This will draw attention to the thread or podcast, and by doing so, you're making a difference and improving the ATS, BTS, and Above Politics experience. So remember, when you find a great thread or podcast, star, flag, and dig the mother. Thanks for being part of the revolution from your friends at the Above Networks, LLC.
Golly, I've got to say, you know, has Gabrielle been reading my mind? I do like her viewpoint of never give up. You're absolutely right. If you're going to stand for any kind of public office, doesn't matter what level it is, there are going to be times when you're going to get demoralized, or you're not going to be elected, or you know, people are going to, you know, laugh at you, call you all the names under the sun, or just not understand what makes you so passionate and fired up. But, you know, we could almost take this as sort of some kind of inspirational podcast.
That's why I wanted to do this show and today, and that's what I'm hoping our listeners will take away from this episode.
You can make a difference. Don't be put down by, you know, all the mainstream media or the huge political organizations saying you can't do anything. They call it grassroots for a reason. And hey, you can always ask questions on AboveTopSecret.com. There are many people there. If you started the thread to say, what do you suggest I do? I'm sure you'll get some very sharp and clever answers from people advising you what processes, what paperwork, who you need to get involved. So,
well, there you go. That's a wrap. We made it to the end of another successful show, and I'm hoping that we've inspired a lot of people. Okay, and so that's all we have for you today. I have been Justin Case.
And I continue to be Martin Bain, and we'll see you on the next Above Politics show.
You've been listening to the Above Politics show. If you have a comment, suggestion, or an opposing view, please deliver it at AbovePolitics.com. The views expressed on the Above Politics show do not necessarily reflect the staff and management of the Above Network LLC or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening, and please continue to deny apathy.